Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He's with us every couple of weeks to talk TV. Dan, how are you?
I'm okay. How you doing, Nick?
I'm all right. Can you believe it's been 38 years since Belushi passed away?
Every once in a while, you sort of pause and think, what would his career be today? What would the direction have been that he would have taken? I don't know, would he have sort of the Bill Murray career where he was nominated for a couple Oscars and people revered him in that way? Would he have just sort of become more like Dan Aykroyd and not necessarily gone down as productive a path? Dan Aykroyd was nominated for an Oscar, too.
He was, yeah.
I think about that periodically whenever I happen upon Animal House on TV or a classic SNL sketch. I think, okay, where would he be 38 years later? What would his career be? And yeah, it's a tough thing to think about.
It is. And, you know, it was interesting because one of the last movies that he made was this film called Continental Divide, which was a really sweet romantic comedy and not at all like he played like a Mike Royko like reporter who goes up to interview this woman played by Blair Brown who lives in the mountains and they fall in love. They slowly fall in love. And it was so unlike anything that Belushi ever did. And I always thought that was kind of the first step into like broadening his career instead of just doing the wacky comedy that he was known for, the slob kind of comedy that he was known for. And I thought he was really terrific in Continental Divide. And it's all the more disappointing that was one of his last movies.
No, he was a force of nature. And the reality is that when you think of the excesses that those guys had and the lives that they lived, you know, who knows what was going to happen if he'd made it another year or 2 years or anything. I mean, there's just no way of knowing. And yeah. I guess that's the sort of sad mystery of it all is it could have been infinite or it could have been finite. And we just never got the chance to find out.
Exactly. All right. Dan Feinberg is from The Hollywood Reporter, and we talk television. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Lots of TV to talk about. There always is.
Well, I tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed that I set my sights on Monday and I got myself undressed. I ain't ready for the altar, but I do agree there's times when a woman sure can be a friend of mine. Will I keep on thinking about you, sister?
Nick DiGilio show continues here on 720 WGN live in the Skyline studio. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us every couple of weeks. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots of TV to talk about. Tomorrow night, Dan, season 4 of Better Things premieres, and we all, you know how we feel about that show. And have you seen the whole season?
I have seen 6 episodes, which feels like a good head start on the season. I don't remember if this is a 10-episode or 12-episode season. Last season was 12 for some reason, but I've seen 6 episodes, and guess what? It's a good show.
No!
It continues to be a good show. It continues to be a show that just dazzles with little moments and occasionally surprises you with big moments and sometimes makes you laugh hard and sometimes makes you feel emotional. And once again, Pamela Adlon directing every episode, and she is just a maestro. She is so good. And yeah, this is just a great show. And I know that some people love it. I feel like it could definitely stand to have a little bit more buzz around it. So I feel like we definitely do our job every spring to make sure that at least within our little sphere, people know to talk about
it. Well, for people who might not even know what it is, tell everybody what Better Things is.
It sort of started off as being described as this semi-autobiographical show about Pamela Adlon as an actress raising her 3 daughters on the outskirts of Hollywood and the ups and downs of that. I get the very strong impression that it is barely semi-autobiographical anymore, largely because the three actresses who play her daughters have just taken the characters, and the characters have been built around their strengths. And so Mikey Madison, Hannah Alligood, and Olivia Edwards are all just really good young actors. And Pamela Adlon, again, this is another thing about her as a director. You don't get performances like that out of young, inexperienced actors if you aren't doing something very right. And so the show doesn't have big, huge plot lines. It's not a mythology-based show. You really probably could just jump in at the start of season four, though I don't know why you'd want to do that, because the first three seasons are great. But it's really just, it's about parenting. It's about the relationships between mothers and daughters and all of that. And it's just such a good and special show.
It really is. And you mentioned the kids. The kids are so great. And the actress who plays her mother is also fantastic. And, you know, and Pamela Adlon, she does have, her mom is British, and she does have three daughters. So, you know, she is pulling from her real life, but obviously it's become different than, you know, it's become much more than what it started out as.
Yeah, I get the impression it's sort of thematically pulls from real life,
yeah,
more than anything. I've mentioned in the past the podcast I do at THR, TV's Top 5, and we have for next Friday, not this Friday, a really good 30-minute chat with Pamela Adlon, who's just so smart and so enthusiastic about this, and so enthusiastic about the fact that, you know, she didn't get these opportunities for three decades in her career, and now suddenly she's in this position where she has the power to direct every episode of an FX TV series, and she is just running with it.
Yeah.
And it's such a pleasure, and you kind of half have to wonder, if someone had given her this opportunity when she was 30, what would she have done? Would she have become Greta Gerwig? Would she have been Olivia Wilde? Or, you know, was this the time in her career when this was supposed to happen, and this is why the show is as good as it is, because she hadn't had this as a microphone, a podium before. So you can look at it either of those two ways. Mostly I just enjoy that this is a show that comes back every year. And it's also not one of those shows like, you know, no offense at all to Donald Glover or Atlanta. That is a great show. But it's also a situation where you don't really know when that show is going to come back.
It just
sort of appears when he's got the time. So far, at least, Better Things has been like clockwork, and it's been like clockwork quality-wise, too. It just chugs along being great TV.
Yeah, it's one of the best shows on TV, and I'm so excited for the premiere tomorrow. It's really great. For people who might not know, Pamela Adlon's been in the business for a really long time, and chugging around doing voice work. She's the voice of Bobby on King of the Hill, for people who might not know, and that's a fantastic character that she plays. And it was just so nice that she finally got this showcase and this opportunity, because I've loved Pamela Adlon since Say Anything. I mean, that's, you know, and I think she's been great in everything that she ever did, and it's just great to watch her soar with this show. It really is.
Totally.
Yep. All right. 312-981-7200. It's Nick DiGilio here, and we're talking with Dan Feinberg for our biweekly visit. He's from The Hollywood Reporter, TV critic. Follow him at The Fine Print, FIEN. Okay. What is Dave?
Well, FX has kind of been a little bit quiet for the past couple of months, and I get the feeling some people have noticed. And basically what they've been doing was storing up an arsenal for a spring tidal wave, tsunami, avalanche, whatever you want to call it. So this week, FX has four shows premiering between FX, FXX, and FX on Hulu, which have now become three separate entities that are going to confuse the heck out of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can provide only as much clarity as I can, which is to say that Better Things is on FX, Dave is on FXX, Devs, which I assume we will talk about a little bit down the road.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I figured is on FX on Hulu. And then if you wait till next month, you're going to have Fargo back on FX. You're going to have Mrs. America on FX on Hulu. It's all just a lot of programming,
wow.
And a lot of it is very good. And so, yeah, so, okay, let's go back to your initial question,
yes.
Which was, what is Dave?
Yes.
Some people, the kids, as we say, may know the popular YouTube rapper Little Dicky.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a TV series based upon that character, who was created by Dave Byrd, who stars here and plays Dave Byrd, a middle-class Jewish guy in his low 30s, trying to make it as a YouTube rapper known as Lil Dicky. His gimmick is based around his diminutive and questionable genitals.
Yeah.
And there's an awful lot of humor in that doctor with a particular problem involving his Johnson and going into rather in-depth and graphic detail about what's happening down there. There are going to be a lot of people who are going to tune this show out so fast, and then there are the people who have already seen the key art, the billboard ads, where the character is coming out of the fly of a pair of boxer briefs, and they're going to go, okay, that's not for me either. And I think that's true. I think that if you hear, okay, it's a show that's based around dick jokes, I can't deal with that.
Wait, Dan, you're going to have to say penis joke.
Oh, okay.
Because I think we had to hit the delay on that. So you can refer to the characters.
Being euphemistic here. I went with Johnson.
Yeah.
Went with genitals. Okay, so now I know what I can't
yes,
say.
Yes.
So, his name is Lil Bleepy. apologies to your genteel listeners.
Okay.
There's an interesting backdrop where it's him trying to make it in the world of hip hop, and he's got these friends who kind of begrudgingly admire what he does, but also aren't really sure what the purpose of his voice is in the hip hop scene, if the world really needs this.
Yeah.
The fifth episode, if people stick with the show, the fifth episode does something that I found truly fascinating involving a supporting character whose name is Gaeta, who is played by basically a non-actor named Gaeta, who is part of Lil Bleepy's posse, in real life. That is his thing. And there's an exploration of mental illness in the hip-hop community that actually made me go, whoa, that actually is a thing that the show is trying to do. And it kind of reframes the entire show around the idea of fragile masculinity and how that plays into the world of hip-hop and how you either have to build yourself up and exaggerate your masculinity or, as Dave's character does here, diminish it and make a joke out of it. The fifth episode caused me to go, maybe there's more happening in this show, but there's just a lot you have to get through to get to it, and it's not going to be for everyone, and anyone who says it's just too much of this, just couldn't deal with it. The first episode's like 31 minutes without commercials. I don't, like FX sometimes lets people just go on forever. Man, it did not need to be that long.
Yeah. All right. And it premieres on Wednesday.
Yes. Okay. It premieres on Wednesday. Yes.
Wednesday.
Trying to figure out the different days of the week.
So it premiered tonight then?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. So the premiere happened tonight, and it's on FXX, and it's called Dave. All right.
And then it will move over onto FX on Hulu tomorrow if anyone wants to catch it there.
And let's not get this confused with the movie with Kevin Kline.
No, let's definitely not get it confused with the movie starring Kevin Kline, which is one of the great political satires and great performances of recent years in comedy.
I totally agree with you. Okay, Dan Feinberg is with us, Hollywood Reporter, TV critic. Follow him at The Fine Print, FIEN. Lots of TV to talk about. 312-981-7200. The conversation continues here on 720 WGN.
Says yes, and I believe him when we talk about the things I say. She hasn't got the faith or the guts to leave him when they're standing in each other's way. You're
tripping back now to places you've been to. You wonder what you're gonna find. You know you've been wrong, but it won't be long before you leave them all far behind. Cause it's the new Mother Nature taking over. It's the new Splendid Lady come to call. It's the new Mother Nature taking over. She's getting us all. She's getting us all.
Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio here until 4 a.m. Marnie Schur of the Takeout website is going to join us to talk a bunch of food-related fun topics, and we're going to do a microwave popcorn taste test. March 5th marks the 38th anniversary of John Belushi's death, so we're going to pay tribute to the great John Belushi. And much more here, 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, is with us, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Dan, tell me about Queen Sono.
Queen Sono, and I'm going to try to avoid you guys having to bleep me again, is the first originally produced African Netflix production. They've had a number of acquired series from Africa because Netflix likes to bring in the international programming, yeah. But this one was produced and filmed in African locations, primarily South Africa. It was created by Kagiso Ladiga, and it's a little bit alias-y. It's an espionage drama about a young woman. Her name is Queen Sono, and her mother was a revolutionary leader around the time of the transition out of apartheid in South Africa, but she was killed in an act of political violence. And so Queen Sono works for a somewhat underground South African intelligence agency, but she has to tell all of her friends and loved ones that she is an art dealer or something. She can't tell anyone. And basically they're trying to get to the bottom of a plot to overthrow not just the South African government, but to destabilize the entire continent, to some degree in the name of a European mercenary corporation. So it mirrors basically a 300 or 400 year history of colonialism in Africa. And it's just a really interesting backdrop, and it's a really provocative background concept, and it covers for a lot of the limitations to the show. The lead actress is Pearl Thusi, and she's good, not great. She's got the attitude to play the part, but she's also being asked to do some serious emotional lifting that she's not as good at. And a lot of the cast has similar problems, that they're good in one of the modes, but then when they're asked to do more, they fall apart a little. But they shoot on location all around the African continent, and that is fascinating to see. And it just doesn't feel exactly like a show like an Alias or like a Homeland, even if you can understand how those are the kind of genre efforts that inspired it. It's only 6 episodes, and they're no longer than 47 minutes. One of them is even 31 minutes. And it's just an interesting take on the espionage thriller genre. It's not perfect. The action scenes are never as good as you want them to be. The stunt scenes are never quite as good as you want them to be. And, you know, whether that has to do with budget, whether it has to do with limitations in the South African film industry, I'm not sure, though South Africa has a lot of production going on it, so I'm not sure that's what it is. I think it really comes down more than anything to budget. So there are times when you're like, man, if Simba would just throw another $5 million at them, this could be something really special. But it's interesting, and it's one of the things that I love most about what Netflix does at this point is all of the international, both acquisitions and originals, that they're bringing in. And Queen Sono is just a good example of the kind of TV show that without what Netflix is doing you would never get a chance to see in this country. You wouldn't get a chance to see these people, hear these stories. There are like 15 different languages that are spoken in this series. Some of them, you know, as quote-unquote basic as Afrikaans, like, okay, I know where that comes from, but there are a lot of regional languages, and if you don't watch it with subtitles, it doesn't necessarily identify which languages are being spoken at a time. I mean, obviously it translates them, but it puts you in a different cultural milieu, and it's very interesting and at times important in that respect. I enjoyed this series, wished it could be a little bit bigger, but I applaud what it's doing and what it represents.
Okay. All right. And that's Queen Sono on Netflix. It's streaming now, right? All the episodes?
Yes. Yes. Okay. It premiered last week, and again, only 6 episodes, so you can definitely sample it. And it's reasonably fun. It's not a show that feels like homework. It really is very alias-y. It just happens to have a very specifically African and South African context, which you just don't see everywhere.
Okay. Dan Feinberg is with us. Nick DiGilio show here continuing, and you can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. You know, talking about Netflix, man, how much content do they have? I mean, it's just, oh my God.
It's endless, and it's endless even when you take into account all of the things that they're losing as everybody else consolidates their studio libraries. So all of the things that were kind of the backbone of Netflix over the years, really and truly, for all that anyone wants to talk about, your Orange is the New Blacks and House of Cards and all of that, you know, repeats of Friends have been the backbone of Netflix. Repeats of The Office have been the backbone. All of the CW repeats that they have. And a lot of that stuff is getting reclaimed as different studios are doing their own thing. As HBO Max acquired Friends, as The Office is going to Peacock, etc. But boy, oh boy, do they just keep churning out stuff. And now they've actually even had a few reality hits. So Love is Blind and The Circle both have really stirred up a lot of conversations. And that had been a thing that Netflix had been struggling with, was actually breaking into the unscripted space. They wanted to be there so badly because reality shows like that are so cheap.
Yeah.
And they can be so valuable to a service. And Netflix couldn't land a successful one. And now Netflix has had 2 fairly buzzy reality shows in like 2 months. So they're doing well, Netflix is.
Yeah, it really is. And one of my favorite running gags is that you spend more time scrolling through what you want to watch than actually watching. Because
it's true, and the problem is that I am almost never browsing. Like, there's never really a point in my life where I'm like, oh, I've got, you know, an hour free, what TV should I watch? And even still, like, on a Saturday night where I give up and I'm like, okay, I'm not watching any more of my screeners, I'm going to do whatever, let's see what's on Netflix, you really can't just get sucked down the algorithm wormhole and spend an hour watching the autoplay trailers and just go, I have no clue what this is or what country it's from, but it looks interesting. Sure.
Yeah. Well, it's a whole process in and of itself. You mentioned on Saturday nights, last week's Saturday Night Live, which, by the way, featured one of the best musical performances I've seen in years. I thought David Byrne was unbelievably great on it. But you mentioned you actually tweeted out that you laughed out loud more at John Mulaney's SNL monologue than the rest of the season put together.
And I know you disagree with me on John Mulaney.
I think the airport sushi thing was brilliant, and I know that he was responsible for that. And I think the guy's got a great comic mind, and he's a great writer. The delivery makes me nuts.
It's what he does, and it's how he gets away with what he does. The sort of, oh, look, I'm a 35-year-old man-child, and I can get away with saying anything I want, but I'm not a, you know, I'm not a bro-y kind of 35-year-old
right.
man-child.
Right.
I don't even know how to describe what it is that he does. I think he's fairly brilliant, and it continues to make me sad that his one real attempt to break into TV was a short-lived Fox sitcom that was just horrible.
Yeah.
And it happens with so many different people that you try to find a way to channel what they do into a sitcom, and you just sometimes can't do it. And boy, was Mulaney on Fox.
It was terrible.
Attempt.
Yeah, it was terrible.
But I think he's great.
You mentioned it. Well, I thought it was a solid episode. And again, like I said, that David Byrne performance was just, I just was blown away. But I love Talking Heads, and I love David Byrne. I'm already predisposed to like it, but that was exceptional, I thought.
Now, have you watched The Sack Lunch Bunch or not?
No, I have not. Yeah, I've not yet watched it. And I wanted you to mention that again, because the last time you talked about it, you said you loved it so much.
I think it's wonderful, but knowing your feelings about John Mulaney, I don't know that it's likely to change those feelings. On the other hand, it has a lot of great musical performances, and I think it's terrific and one of my favorite things of, you know, the past however long, past few months to be sure. But if you don't like his particular delivery, I don't know if it'll work, but give it a shot because the musical performances are super.
Okay, well, tell everybody what we're talking about. Clarify this John Mulaney show.
This is John Mulaney and the Sack Lunch Bunch. It premiered at the end of December, I believe, on Netflix. And it's basically John Mulaney doing a children's special with a group of kids who are all extremely talented musical theater performers themselves. And you will be seeing many of them in sitcoms and TV shows and plays for years to come. And it's not really a parody of the genre, but occasionally it is. It's full of musical performances and musical guests, including David Byrne, including Jake Gyllenhaal, who also popped up on SNL over the weekend.
Yep.
Because they're buddies, and a few other very recognizable people if you're in the Broadway circle, you know, if you follow that world. And John Mulaney is a big old Broadway fan.
Yep.
That's well established as one of his things. It's just, to me, I thought that was as fun and pleasant an 85 minutes of TV special as there's been in months, and I hope that he gets the chance, if he wants to do another installment, but he may just have thought it was a fun one-off to do for kicks.
Okay, well, and that's streaming on Netflix right now.
Indeed.
Okay, Dan Feinberg from the Hollywood Reporter. We're talking television. 312-981-7200. Follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And the television talk continues right here on 720 WGN.
Time was drifting, this rock got to roll. So I hit the road and made my getaway. Restless feeling, really got a hold. Started searching for a better way. And I kept on looking for a sign in the middle of the night, but I couldn't see the light. No, I couldn't see the light. I kept on looking for a way to take me through the night. Couldn't get it right.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We continue with the show. Here we are. And it'll be a Thursday in a few minutes, and we'll keep you company till 4 a.m. And Marnie Shore from The Takeout is going to join us. We're going to have some food conversations, have a lot of fun doing that, and then we're going to taste test microwave popcorn. We love to do the taste test stuff when she's here. It is the 5th of March is the 38th anniversary of John Belushi's death, if you can believe that. And so we're going to pay tribute to the great John Belushi. Classic stand-up from Richard Pryor. We got gadgets that would confuse modern generations and much more. Phone number is 312-981-7200, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter, TV critic, joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. And Dan is here. Dan, tell me about It's Personal with Amy Hogart.
Yeah, if people remember, there was a very short-lived pseudo-documentary comedy series called Almost Royal a couple years ago about two people remarkably far down the line of succession. Part of the joke was each episode would note that they were further away in the line of succession than they were previously. So one episode is like 65th in line. And so Amy Hogart was one of the two actors in that. And for the past couple years, she's been a occasional correspondent on Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. And she's just really funny. She has a perky British sense of humor that she uses as an excuse to allow her to say many, many things, which is, something that many British comics on American TV have been doing. It's Personal is her new true TV series, and it's really hard to describe because the premise is that she's not a qualified therapist, but she cares a lot, and so she goes around trying to help people who have not serious problems, but moderate problems. So the first episode was someone with sort of social anxiety issues, and she tried to help him because he couldn't get a job. There's a later episode that's about someone who believes that she's not getting promotions in work because she doesn't have a sense of humor. So Amy tries to help her get a sense of humor. A later episode involves a young college student who's feeling insecure and having body issues because she goes to college in Miami and feels like Miami has been overtaken with hard bodies, and you just can't be a normal person in Miami. And so she's got an inferiority complex. And so Amy Hogarth tries to talk these people through their problems. It's an unsteady premise, because if the person has real problems, it's hard to watch what Amy Hogarth's doing and feeling like it's really accomplishing anything, and maybe it's potentially, you know, doing more harm than good. So of the three episodes I've seen, the Miami one was the one I liked the most because it was the most surmountable problem. She basically takes it upon herself to give this young college student a new perspective on Miami so that she both understands that Miami is not only this one thing, but also to some degree work through her body issues. And it feels like exactly the right level of issue for what a show like this can do. So I'm going to be curious what the show is as it progresses, because I think Amy Hogarth is really talented, and I'm kind of surprised that she hasn't had the opportunity to have a vehicle like this, you know, frequently and constantly. I think if Almost Royal came out today, it would probably be a small hit if it were in the right place, because, you know, thanks to Meghan Markle, we're much more conversant about British royalty than we were then.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think she's really talented. I think this is an unsteady introduction in her new show. I would like to believe that it will have the opportunity to grow and kind of find its voice, because under the right circumstances and with the right curation of issues, I think it could be a good show.
And it's now, and these people are real, right? These are people who are real people with real problems.
And with real people with real problems, and the beginning makes it clear that they were all properly vetted by actual licensed professionals before Amy got anywhere near them.
Oh, okay.
And,
all right.
You know, like, she's not really out there to do damage to people, but you can also tell that the show ideally would like to help talk people through some stuff, you know, like to have conversations about things. And part of the gimmick is that Amy somewhat, you know, she makes everything that she's investigating half about her. So on one hand, she's very much trying to help the people. On the other hand, she's very much tying it into her own insecurities. And that's funny also, but it's another thing that's funny when the person is, let's just say, 85% okay, and they've got maybe 15% they need to work on. The person with anxiety who couldn't get a job in the first episode, I thought he was probably more in the 55 to 60% troubled range, and it was too much. And then the person who didn't have a sense of humor, she was already an EVP of content strategy at some company or other, so she'd been doing well, clearly, without making jokes at dinner parties. So that, to me, felt too little. It was like someone who maybe had a 5% problem.
Yeah.
I think the Miami episode is someone with exactly the right size problem. So that's what they should aim for in the future.
That's a really interesting premise. It's unusual. I've never heard anything like this.
It's interesting. It's the kind of thing which, in the wrong hands, is 75 different lawsuits waiting to happen.
Right.
So I assume they're being extremely careful in the vetting process, and I hope they are, because if the person's problem is too serious, you really can't watch it in this context. There are too many shows that have the sort of man on the street, the Jordan Klepler kind of thing, where you go and you interview people who are clearly borderline insane, and you're just like, okay, ha ha ha, I'm going to make fun of you now. And sometimes it's very funny, but sometimes you're also like, okay, that person is just troubled, and they need more than being made fun of on national TV for what's actually wrong with them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with that. That's why the premise, it's just the premise alone, the idea alone, makes me a little uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Oh, totally. No, and again, I would tell you that if you're curious, wait a couple weeks and check out the Miami episode.
Okay.
Don't check out either of the first two episodes. But it's a somewhat cringy premise, and obviously they think that the premise is also at least a somewhat big swing. I mean, it's not just another, you know, person on the street interviewing people. They want it to be something that could have value, I guess. So yeah, it's interesting. And again, I think she's really good, and I think she's really smart.
I loved her on Full Frontal, and so you know I am a fan, and I'm curious about this. It's on True TV on Wednesday nights. Again, this one premiered tonight. So
last week, I believe.
Oh, last week. Okay, so, it premiered last week, but it's out on Wednesdays.
And people can check that out.
All right, next week, I'll definitely tune in. Okay, Dan Feinberg is here. He's the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. I got a couple of texts coming in with some thoughts about TV. And if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio Show continues.
After midnight, we're going to let it all hang out. After midnight, we're gonna chug, love, and shine. We're gonna cause talk and suspicion, give an exhibition, find out what it is all about. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out.
Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 a.m. Coming up in a little bit, Marnie Shore from The Takeout is going to join us. We've got a lot of fun food topics to talk about. We're also going to do a taste test of microwave popcorn. We're going to talk about gadgets that would confuse modern generations. Our classic stand-up right from The Tonight Show, The Johnny Carson Show, which you can see on Antenna TV. We'll get an appearance from Richard Pryor. And John Belushi, this is now officially the 38th anniversary of John Belushi's death. We're going to pay tribute to the great John Belushi. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We continue our conversation with Dan Feinberg. Dan, a couple of shows that I want to mention that I am enjoying very much.
Okay, bring it on.
First one, of course, is always Extraordinary Playlist, which I just love. And it's people are watching this show, right?
Some people are, yeah. I get the feel, again, we don't know anymore who's watching things until basically 3 weeks after they've aired. But I get the impression some people are watching it.
Yeah.
The past couple episodes have been really good. I thought this week's episode, which focused on Alex Newell's character, I thought that was a really strong episode.
Yeah.
The third episode where Lauren Graham actually got to sing, I was relieved that they let her do that.
Yeah, I gotta say, that's one of my favorite things ever, is watching Lauren Graham sing Wrecking Ball. I just thought, I was like, this is pure joy right here.
Wrecking Ball, and then the Katy Perry song also.
Yeah.
Yep. No, they've been giving a lot of people really good things to do, and Jane Levy is just so wonderful, and I can't emphasize enough how pleasant it is to actually see her smiling, because so much of her persona has been kind of surly over the years.
It has.
She's so great at that.
Yeah,
she's, watching her smile is just great.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you know, like the first time I really went nuts over her was the Evil Dead remake, and that's about as far removed as from this as possible. But I've been a fan since that performance, and I've loved her in everything that I see her in.
She's really good. So yeah, okay. So what's the next show on your list?
Awkwafina is Nora from Queens. Kills me. I just think it's hilarious, and I'm so glad that this is a showcase for it. She's having such a great time now, Awkwafina. What a great period of time for her, and I just think the show is hilarious. I really do.
It's a really good show, and they're letting her do what she wants to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what? It kind of fills the void that was left by Broad City. In that kind of way. It has a little bit of a similar vibe to it. And I think it's great, and I think she's great. So.
Agreed.
All right. We've got a couple of texts here. Steve says, does Dan know when my favorite FX comedy, What We Do in the Shadows, is coming back?
Next month or the month after. It's another one of the shows that's lined up for the spring. Basically, there were those those couple quiet months for FX, but it is coming back in the spring. I have seen exactly one scene from the new season, which does not count as enough. So,
yeah.
But yes, I'm looking forward to seeing more of it because it's a show that I was mixed on last season, but when it was good, it was fantastic. So.
Maybe I'm
hoping it's a little bit more consistent.
I liked it. I enjoyed it. I think a lot more than you did. Because I laughed a lot. There was one episode that I thought was not very good, but that all the other episodes, I particularly the episode with all the cameos of all the other vampires, I just thought was hilarious.
That was one of the best half hours of comedy all of last year.
Absolutely, no question about it. Okay, it's Dan Feinberg, TV critic for the Hollywood Reporter, and we're talking TV. And tell me about I'm Not Okay With This. I saw the trailer for it, and I'm very intrigued. I have not watched an episode yet.
This is one where it is as easy a binge as one could possibly imagine. It is a 7-episode first season. It is based on a graphic novel by the same author, Charles Forsman, who did The End of the Bleeping World. Notice how I'm avoiding getting bleeped myself here.
Yep.
And it feels a lot like that. It is very obviously in that vein, and they're obviously steering into it directly. So it's Charles Forsman's graphic novel. Jonathan Entwistle, who was one of the directors on the first season, is the director of the entire first season of End of the Bleeping World, rather, is the director of the entire season of I'm Not Okay With This. And it's a coming-of-age story. It stars Sophia Lillis, who people will know as the young Jessica Chastain from the first movie of the two It movies,
right,
or as the young Amy Adams from Sharp Objects.
Right.
And it's just a good star vehicle for her. It shows how very totally qualified she is to not play the younger version of a famous redhead, to simply be the star redhead herself.
Right.
And so it's about a teenage girl who's struggling with adolescence, but also beginning to experience superpowers, as one does. So it's a little bit carry as a romantic dramedy to some degree. She's also coming to terms with her sexuality, which through the first season is somewhat in flux. The coming of age stuff I really thought was wonderfully handled. It was shot in and around Pittsburgh, and it's got a very nice Pennsylvania blue collar feel to it. It's very grounded. Again, Sophia Lillis is great. The male lead is Wyatt Olef, who was also in It. And they've got a nice, easygoing, geeky chemistry together. There's a heavy John Hughes influence. The downside of the show is that the superhero stuff or the superpower stuff is really by the numbers, and it feels for the most part in the first season like it's unnecessary, and yet they keep bringing it back, and I get the feeling it's going to be very important in subsequent seasons, assuming there are. But more than anything, it's 7 episodes, and you can do it in less than an afternoon, and for the most part, I liked its vibe. I laughed a handful of times. I thought it was sweet and accurate at other times. It's got a great soundtrack. And, yeah, superpowers, if that's the thing it's going to take to get somebody to watch it. I like this show. I wanted to love it because I loved End of the Bleeping World. It is not as good as the first season of End of the Bleeping World, but I think it is very solid as its own thing.
Okay. I'm really looking forward to it because I really like Sophia Lillis. I think she's great.
You should check it out. It is now available on Netflix, as it were.
Netflix. All right. Dan Feinberg talking TV, and it continues on 720 WGN.
Well, it's all riding around in the breeze. Well, it's all
can sit around and wait for the phone to ring. Waiting for someone to tell you.
Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN on this Thursday morning. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. TV conversation with Dan Feinberg continues. Dan, okay, I am so curious about Devs because I love Alex Garland. You know, I think that more people should have seen Annihilation, but they didn't. yeah, I just love his stuff.
Well, if you love Alex Garland, you will discover that Devs is very, very Alex Garland.
Good.
And so, you know, it is not diluted particularly. It is an 8-episode limited FX on Hulu series, so it will be on Hulu primarily, so that is where people will find it. And the first 2 episodes, I believe, go up tomorrow or today, depending on what day it is.
It goes up on Thursday. Okay, so it goes up today.
Yes, in the first 2 episodes. And it this may be one where, I mean, I understand restraint is a difficult thing, and so you may not be able to do it. It may benefit, though, from binging, because it's kind of a mood piece in that Alex Garland-y kind of way. It's hypnotic.
For people who might not know who Alex Garland is, he's a writer-director who did, as I mentioned, Annihilation, which was a really great and weird movie with Natalie Portman, and he did Ex Machina, which is a fantastic movie. So,
indeed, he also wrote 28 Days Later.
Yep.
His first novel is The Beach, which I feel like has over the years gotten kind of a bum rap because the Danny Boyle movie adaptation of it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
But it's a book I really, really enjoyed. I haven't read it since I was, you know, 20, but when I was 20, it was awesome.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Yeah.
But he has, you know, since he became basically a writer, director, auteur, you've been able to see what his fascinations are, and they tend to revolve around sort of intermediate future, not like hundreds of years in the future, but a couple years in the future, and the evolution of technology and its dehumanizing influence. And in that respect, Devs is a little bit like an extended Black Mirror episode, but I preferred it to most of those. The premise is almost impossible to describe without spoiling things, and there's really no good reason to spoil it. Basically, Nick Offerman plays Forrest, the CEO of a Bay Area tech company called Amaya. Sonia Mizuno, who's been in both of Alex Garland's previous writing directing episodes, plays a young woman who's a computer engineer, and her boyfriend just got inducted into a mysterious program at this company called Devs, which is a remote building on the campus that is basically a shimmering gold cube where people are programming code towards a goal that it takes multiple episodes to figure out what it is, but whatever they're doing there, it causes something to happen to Lily's boyfriend, and she investigates what happened. And that is the vaguest way I can put what the plot is.
Right.
And if you were just to break down what happens in the show, it's probably a sort of techno-noir movie that could have been done in 95 minutes, but it's stretched over 8 episodes because the pacing is hypnotic and unique, and sometimes it's slow in ways that are infuriating, but intentionally so. Other times it moves really, really fast, and they go through things much faster than you expect. It's a very strong cast beyond those guys. Nick Offerman is terrific. He's playing it totally serious and straight, and it's a great performance. Lots of just very good character actors, from Allison Pill, who's kind of everywhere this spring.
Yeah.
Theater great Stephen McKinley Henderson has a great role. Zach Grenier, who people will know from The Good Wife and The Good Fight, has a key role. They're all great, and all of the tech people are the people who Alex Garland has been working with on his movies. So there is continuity in cinematography. Rob Hardy shot it, and he shot Garland's movies. Production design, the composers are the same, and it's you just want to kind of bathe in the mood that it sets. I was, if I'm being frank, somewhat disappointed by the ending. It comes out a little bit more pat than I would have liked for it to. I just wanted something more. But definitely for 6 or 7 episodes, I was just enjoying watching this happen and watching that FX let Alex Garland just do his thing. There is no sense at all of interference or anything like it. You're just watching a person with a very particular sensibility and worldview do his thing, and it's impressive to see at its very best. It is at times quite beautiful, and the fifth and sixth episodes in particular, I thought were superior.
I'm so glad to hear that, because I'm a huge fan of Alex Garland. I think he's got, as you said, a very unique point of view and perspective, and I think he's a remarkable writer and filmmaker. So I'm very excited about this.
Some people, particularly after the first episode, are going to be pulling their hair out if they don't know Alex Garland's thing, and they don't know his particular sense of pacing, because it is. Very foggy and obtuse what is happening, and you're either going to be like, okay, I'm just following this wherever it's going, or you're going to be like, I want something. Tell me what I need to know.
Yeah.
And that's not the way he tells stories.
Yeah, I know. I saw Annihilation with my parents. They were like, huh?
And I think that's a fair response, but that's also a movie where either you're going to be like, I want to know exactly what is happening, and I need you to explain this to me, because otherwise it's going to infuriate me.
Yeah.
Or you just sit there and you go, ooh, shimmery.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And so it's on FX Hulu, and it's tonight, right?
Yes, first two episodes, and then it will be weekly on Thursdays from now.
That's fantastic. That's such great news. Before we get you out of here, did you watch the full season of Better Call Saul?
No, I have only seen the first 4 episodes. So I've seen the 3 that have already aired, and then I've seen next week's episode as well.
And they're all great, I'm assuming.
They are all terrific. It is such a good show, and it is a show that is so confident in what it is at this point. And all of the performances are so good, and you know, it's just good that we're back in the portion of spring where Better Call Saul is there, where Better Things is there. There are a lot of people who are totally going to dig Devs, and if people wait a couple weeks, Westworld's going to come back. I haven't watched it yet, so I have no answers on that. But it's not like there was ever a slow period, and it's not like anyone should have ever lacked for good TV. But we are right back in the middle.
I got to say, as a Chicagoan who's been following Bob Odenkirk's career, I never would have thought that he would be doing getting all this praise and award nominations for a serious and dramatic role,
and a subtle and serious dramatic role, and a subtle and serious dramatic role that was based on a character who on Breaking Bad was introduced as basically comic relief.
Yeah,
he's the goofy attorney on Breaking Bad, and everyone's like, okay, the new series about him is going to be wacky and funny Saul Goodman, and yay. And that's just not the show it's become, and the show it's become is so much better than anyone had any reason to expect it would be.
Yeah.
So all praise to that show.
Yeah, and good for him. I've been a fan of his since he was at Second City here in Chicago. I was studying at Second City when he was on the main stage with Farley. and I got to see a lot of his work on Second City. Of course, Mr. Show is one of my favorite things ever. So it's nice to see him getting all this praise. I'd like to see him win an Emmy. Wouldn't that be nice?
It really would be, and I have high hopes that with 2 seasons left to go, and with the work he's doing and the show is doing, that he's going to eventually win one, and that Ray Seahorn, who has never been nominated, will eventually be nominated and maybe win.
Yeah.
Jonathan Banks, this week's episode and next week's episode, I'm not sure he's ever been better. It would be nice if he could win.
Yeah.
Just everything got sort of caught up in basically like 4 seasons of Emmy voters giving nonstop awards to Game of Thrones.
Right.
And I'm hopeful that it will be a good opportunity to get some new blood in there this year.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Dan, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Till the next time, Nick.
Okay, buddy. Bye. Dan Feinberg, he's great, and I love talking TV with him. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We will be joined by Marnie Shore, who's editor-in-chief of The Takeout. We're going to talk about some food topics, and then we're going to do a taste test of microwave popcorn. We love to do the taste tests when Marnie comes in. All right. Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN.